My name's Tim, if I've not met you before, I'm one of the leaders here at church, and we're just doing a little kind of mini-series, two evenings, thinking about money, about money, generosity, stewardship, debt, and those kind of things. And this evening, rather than just hearing one person talk, we're going to do a little conversation between the four of us. And the reason why we're doing that is this. I think for people who are Dave and my generation, actually money was very different in our days. I mean, we did use cash. My first job, when I first moved to Bristol, I earned £7,000 a year. But I bought my first house for £17,000. Three stories, two bathrooms, up north. It sounds atrocious, doesn't it? Now, money within culture has changed over the times that I've been a house owner and a employee. And so in some ways, there's biblical truth that applies to every generation. But in some ways, why we were having some of the young adults team speaking tonight is actually, what's it feel like to take some of the biblical truth and actually work it out in a financial environment that's very different? Kind of living and working, maybe buying your first house, is very different now than it was for me. But there's something about the Bible that is equally true. So that's what we're going to do for about 25 minutes or so, have a little conversation around money and hear what these guys think, how the Bible affects the way they think about money. But before we do that, maybe a chance to introduce themselves. Okay. So T, do you want to just introduce yourself, say a bit about who you are, again, maybe about your kind of financial situation at the moment?
So my name is T.A.T. and I go by T around here. I'm the youngest of the panel, and I believe in the context of this panel, I'm supposed to be the one that's like young and dumb, but I think that's not what Tim said. He said the world is at my oyster point of view. So that's my position in the panel. And then for context, I graduated last year, but I'm doing my master's, but I also work and I also run a business. So it's like a little bit of everything, like world is your oyster, literally. So employed and a student, yeah, both of those.
Great. Hi, everyone. My name's Emily. I'm not as young as T. probably my situation, I'm employed. I've been working for about 7 years. Got a mortgage. Yeah, pretty classic, really, in the sense of late 20s, got a mortgage, been working for a while. So that's my situation.
Hi, I'm Luke. I'm 29. Again, homeowner. But, you know, the bank owns half my house. I'm a lawyer and I work here in Bristol.
Great. We're going to read the passage that's been kind of put for today. And it gives us this idea of how money within a community like a community of faith, a church community, the people of God, that culture of money is very different from the culture in which we live. So we're going to read from Deuteronomy chapter 15, just the first 10 or so verses. So I think Luke's going to, I don't know how good your eyes are.
Read it off that screen. At the end of every 7 years, you must cancel debts. This is how it is to be done. Every creditor shall cancel any loan they have made to a fellow Israelite. They shall not require payment from anyone among their own people, because the Lord's time for cancelling debts has been proclaimed. You may require payment from a foreigner, but you must cancel any debt your fellow Israelite owes you. However, there need be no poor people among you, for in the land the Lord your God is giving you to possess as your inheritance, he will richly bless you, if only you fully obey the Lord your God and are careful to follow all these commands I'm giving you today. For the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised, and you will lend to many nations but borrow from none. You will rule over many nations, but none will rule over you. If anyone is poor among your fellow Israelites in any of the towns of the land that the Lord your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted towards them. Rather, be open-handed and freely lend them whatever they need. Give generously to them, and do so without a grudging heart. Then, because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in everything you put your hand to.
The book of Deuteronomy was this kind of great big speech by Moses as he was taking the people that had been slaves in Egypt into the promised new land. And as they started forming a new culture, what's it truly mean to be the people of God and to live in his world, his way? And obviously how they handled money, how they handled debt, and how they handled generosity was something that was really important to that community. And as you read through the Bible and look at the teaching of Jesus and into the New Testament church, which applies to us today. Actually, that idea of here's a different culture living to a different set of values that we're called into. And hopefully as we have a conversation tonight, for you thinking about how does your money work? How do you look at the stewardship of what you've been given? And how does that kind of impact the way that we follow Jesus? So we've got a few little questions. We're going to have a little conversation. T, I'm going to start off with you if that's okay. And last week, Dave was talking at the service about generosity and giving. And again, from your perspective, your age and stage of life, kind of what do you think about generosity and giving?
So when I think about money and stewardship as a young adult, the big thing for me when I was kind of writing this was the importance of generosity. And so there's a few verses I'm going to read. They might not necessarily all be on the screen, so just listen to me. Deuteronomy 15:14 reads, "Give to them as the Lord your God has blessed you." And it reads in Proverbs 11:25, "A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed." And another version that I really like of the same verse is, "Whoever brings blessing will be enriched, and one who waters will himself be watered." So for me, it's about recognizing that the resources I have are ultimately a gift from God, and I'm called to use them in a way that not only meets my needs but also blesses others. And having said that, I am at the start of my career, but I'm also studying. I study in London, so I don't even study here, and I don't live at home. And so what it means is that a lot of the money I make goes on the just doing the every, like getting there and like my stay and all that kind of stuff. So what remains after that is ensuring that how can I give back to my community, not just through like finances, but also through time, and like knowing that ultimately finances are a gift from God and they belong to God. And so my stubbornness to not give back is literally failing the test at hurdle number one, because it was never mine in the first place. It was blessed unto me. And so I've entitled this next section Practical Application. So I strive to be intentional about how I allocate my resources. So obviously budgeting and rah, rah, rah. But like actually, okay, it might look different month to month. So what is a really good cause this month? Or how can I help maybe a family member or someone else? And I think tithing is often the thing that church covers when we're talking about money, and supporting local initiatives. So like, you know, the charity that we heard about earlier. But I think one thing we often miss is when the church is talking about money, and not necessarily Woodlands, but I just think overall we talk about money, is that how are we spending our money and investing it in endeavours that align with our values? And so, for example, I said earlier I have a business, I have a little streetwear label. And so it's feasible enough in this day and age to have a really great idea for like an AI startup tech company, whatever it is, and work really hard on it and create a wonderful pitch deck. And it's possible to maybe get some investment from that and pitch it to people that can support you in that idea. But how many of those investors are a little bit shady? How many of them don't align with your Christian values? So, for example, some might engage in fraud or prioritize profit over principles and neglect social responsibility. But I suppose you're thinking, well, if I make the money from the fraud and then I tithe some, it's fine. But like, is it in the first place? Should you maybe just completely be avoiding that? Should you maybe look to earn less, even if it's in another way? And so, yeah, like I said, so for example, in that example, so if you were to receive investment from this company, what are they funding otherly? Are they funding the pornography industry? Are they funding illegal weapons manufacturing? That's a very extreme example, but I suppose it's really easy to just be like, I've made my money this month in whatever way, shape or form that is, and I'm giving this percentage back to church or back to charity, but how did you get it in the first place? And
So, yeah, it's easy to say that you won't do it, but for others that might look like maybe doing something that you shouldn't in order to get a promotion, like saying something about a colleague that would mean that you get it and they don't. And so I think in all of it around money and stewardship, as a Christian, it's how you handle your values and just apply that to the money you get and the money you give. And so I see each financial decision as an opportunity to live out my faith and, yeah, have a positive impact on the people around me. But I do often fail, but I try, I suppose, so.
Thanks, T. I think, well, this is, we're just doing this here, but actually in small groups this week, I know for some people within small groups there's a chance to talk and maybe some of them say, even ethical investment, how about that? I don't know whether that comes across your radar at all. But I don't know, Emily or Luke, anything else that you'd like to add on generosity and giving at all?
Yeah, I think the values is really important about, you know, how do we look different to the rest of the world when we spend and we give our money? And I think a huge thing that stood out to me is around, I think God isn't asking you to become poor and poverty. He's asking you to give to a community and to create community and to, yeah, align with your values and help each other. And I think then no one's in need, which I think is huge because that's not what we see in society. So yeah, community over the poverty mindset.
Yeah, and I think I would just add on generosity. It's probably a choice around a way of life rather than a tick box, right, did that. And I think, you know, if we're saying, oh, I've given X amount to church or X amount to charity, therefore I am generous, and everything else is for me, it's kind of, have I quite got that point around what generosity is? Whereas if it's generosity actually goes beyond giving to church or giving to charities, am I showing people the generosity that I, as a Christian, believe that I have received? You know, freely I receive and freely I give. I think if that's a kind of a practice and a way of life that we just get into a habit of, then that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a really interesting quote on a book that's called Your Money and Your Life, and it says that we humans are selfish by nature, and giving sacrificially is a major way in which we can be more like Jesus, who gave everything for us. And I think that's a kind of, it's an interesting reflection, isn't it, on it's not just about the amount, it's about the attitude we have. Great. Second question then is, the topic for tonight is stewardship and debt. So, Luke, how would you understand stewardship from reading the Bible, again, for you and your generation?
Yeah, I suppose the Bible really is one big narrative arc, which is telling us that we as Christians are stewards of God's creation and his blessing. And that is no more or less true in relation to money than it is in relation to looking after the planet and the environment. And I think that if we understand ourselves in relation to money to be stewards rather than masters, I think that's really helpful. I don't know if anyone's watched Lord of the Rings, that classic preaching text. But Denethor, the steward of Gondor, who can't get past the fact that he is just the steward and not the king, it drives him mad. And when we think of ourselves as anything more than stewards of the world or stewards of our money, it will just drive us mad. And I think the thing with stewardship is it's that imperative to look after something responsibly, but it's not about, it's not for our sole benefit. I suppose in the parable of the talents, when in Matthew 25, when a master goes away and he leaves 5 bags of gold to one servant, 2 bags of gold to another, and 1 bag of gold to the other. And the one who gets 5 bags of gold invests it and turns it into 10. And the one who gets 2 invests it and turns it into 4. And the one who gets 1 is a bit miffed and digs a hole, puts it in the ground, and just gives back the 1 bag of gold when the master comes back. And the master is really kind of dismayed that he's, you lazy so-and-so, if you'd even just put it in the bank, you'd have got interest. That idea that we have resources to steward well, and that actually looking after them and investing responsibly and whatnot is important. And around money, I think Christians are supposed to look after our money well and to steward what money we have well. and not to kind of fritter it away foolishly or hide it away or to dig a hole and put it in the ground and say, I'm not going to engage with that, full stop. I think then there's a fine line, which I often find myself kind of treading, which is how do I steward what we have and seek the prosperity of the city without becoming completely obsessed by my own kind of wealth and my own wealth-creating potential as an individual. And I think, for me, I think avoiding comparison is really important. If we look to our left or right, there'll be people who earn more or less than us in this church, and that's going to be true in whatever circle of life we find ourselves in. And if we start to compare with what other people have and what other people are given, you know, in the parable of the talents, it doesn't say it explicitly, I kind of assume that that last servant is a bit miffed that he got one bag and everyone else got two or five. And actually, if we are unable to be content with what we have, then we're never going to be able to steward it well. And actually, there's this really interesting point in the parable of the talents, that even that one who had the one bag of gold, it was an enormous amount of wealth. It was about 20 years worth of pay. And if we compare what we have with what other people have, it will completely rob us of that. And I think, I suppose, yeah, if we can avoid comparison and look for contentment, to be content in all things, then I think that's a really important kind of practice if we're thinking about stewardship.
Great. T or Emily, anything that you'd like to add to that at all?
No.
I think for me, when I've always kind of had that, I'll do that later attitude. So I remember when I was a student, I'd be like, oh, when I've graduated and I've actually got an income, or when I've got a better job, when I've got the next promotion, maybe I'll give, when I've got... But it really doesn't matter, because the more things you get, the more things that are going out. Yeah. So it never feels like you actually have, oh, enough to give, to tithe to church and to do all this kind of stuff. And I think God's calling us to really entrust us with whatever wealth that we have. And we need to do and be loyal with that at whatever stage we're at, and whether that's time and money. But I think there's always excuses, so we have to pick what we're going to choose and how we're going to do it.
I think that's really important. I think stewardship is not to do with the amount of money you've got, it's to do, again, with the attitude that you handle money. So even as a student, again, back in my days, there was money that I had that I knew I could steward, and there was choices I could make with my money, and kind of I could choose. And again, people might say, well, I'm not sure I've got enough to give or to be generous. Actually, you've got enough to choose whether you have a coffee or to choose. There's certain choices around your mobile phone contract. There's certain choices that we make, and are some of those choices to steward what we have, not just for our desires. So the money we have in our hands is not ours, but it's God's. And actually, if it's God's, we must use it for not what we desire, but what he directs. And I think in some ways stewardship is part of that journey, is saying, with what I've got, God, I want to just not use it to feed my desires and what I want from life, but actually how do I use it, again, partly to know, live my life well, but also how does your kingdom come, and you will be done. Great, thanks. Dave was sort of saying, just at the kind of little intro, that money has a strange power. It's funny, isn't it, how we think it's just a currency. It's just something that kind of you exchange for kind of for products or for food. But actually, money has got a power. And how we navigate money, I think, is really important. So, Emily, I wonder kind of, how do you view kind of things like money and success and contentment? And, again, the things that money can offer and how you live your discipleship life of following Jesus?
I think it's a real challenge. I think if you're quite an ambitious person, which I am, I'm sure many people in the room are, I think the world is telling you that success is about how much money you're earning, what you own, how well you're doing. And I think it can give you a sense of achievement. It can give you a sense of validation from other people. And I think it can last for a short period of time. But the reality is, whenever those things kind of settle, you don't feel that content. Actually, you want the next thing. You want to strive for the, more money, and that's never enough. And I think, Ecclesiastes 5:11-10 says, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. And I think a huge thing that I relate to is if I, I guess as you earn more, as your income becomes quite stable, you get quite self-reliant. Like, I can do this, I can meet this myself, I can pay my bills, and I don't really need God because, you know. And I think it's really important that when we're giving, God is actually teaching us to rely on other people if we are lacking, but also to depend on him to meet some of our needs rather than ourselves. And I think within that, actually, I've never felt as free and content when I have actually been giving, because it's not all about you. It's like, oh, well, there's other people that I can actually support. And within that, actually, you see the love of other people towards you and that community and what God's asking. And I think it's huge that God is actually that contentment for you. So are you seeking your validation in money or your job, or are you seeking validation in your relationship with God? And I think it's something you have to check quite regularly. And yeah, and it's very easy to slip up on that. So you have to keep going back to, why am I doing this? What's my decisions? And how do I honour God in that?
Yeah. Right, anything else to add on that one, Luke or T?
I think I'd just add that in life, lots of things are kind of contended. And one of those is our source of our identity. And I think if we are deriving our value and our identity, like the risk with money, because it is exchanged as a token of worth, the risk is that the more money we have, the more worth that we attribute to ourselves, the more worthy we think we are. Actually, the truth is our worth comes from who we are in Christ. Our identity is found solely in him. And if money starts to kind of creep in, we will lose sight of who we are in Christ.
Yeah, I think I was thinking similarly, like, and for example, students maybe, for example, who aren't necessarily earning right now, but like it happens very quickly. You go from like graduating and then like maybe like 3 years later, you're like, I don't know, it can be quite a steep jump in how much you're earning in a short amount of time. So with identity, just being like, literally just checking in with yourself constantly and being like, look, actually, this is who I'm called to be. This is just another tool. This is just another thing, like literally a tangible thing. And we're gifted with it, just like we are with a lot of things. Like, we're gifted with chairs, but like, you don't take all the chairs home. Like, it's just another thing. So yeah, it's just, I think literally it's just a case of like constantly reminding yourself and having like notes on this. Or like, we come to church and we listen to the word and we do our Bible studies, but how often do you actually put that into a form that you can go back and you can look at? And when you're weak in a certain area, for example, stewardship or money, you can go back and read it and remind yourself what the point was in the first place.
I think it's interesting, in 1 Timothy 6, Paul talks about, again, if you get kind of snared by money, he says this, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world and we could take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. And again, I just think that's just an interesting thing about, again, how kind of learning early, learning well, of what it means to the success, the power, in some ways, the false freedom. We're going to talk a bit about debt. And Jesus does want to bring us freedom, but sometimes we think that money gives us the freedom. It gives us the ability to choose and to do. And somehow we think the more money we have, the more choice we have, the more freedom we have, the more fun we can have, the more life we can have. And actually, if you start loving money, it's actually, Paul says, it's the root of all kinds of evil. And unless we kind of look in our own hearts and we kind of try and root it out and make sure that actually contentment, actually there's something wonderful about being content with what you have. I've lived my life and I've tried to live it generously, and I must say I've been really contented. I'm not rich. I've not got a huge bank balance. Probably my pension pot isn't huge. I've got a little ex-council house with a lovely little garden, and it's not a big house, but it's our house. And actually, I think contentment is just a wonderful thing. And if you strive, and it's money, and it's kind of, what can I do, get next? Kind of the next biggest thing. Actually, I think we can lose that sense of the life that God's called us to, where money, if it becomes a master, is a killer. But it's a great servant. And I think stewardship, like you're saying, stewardship is something that actually where we, money can serve us really well. Okay, next thing we just wanted to have a little chat about is about debt. And I'm not quite sure what you think about debt. I mean, it's interesting, I've got a little slide here, that about in recent years, the negative concept of debt has cleverly been replaced by the more positive picture of credit. And I just think it's interesting, in a world that's a materialistic world, where kind of encourage you to spend beyond your means because the stuff is going to make you happy. And back in the day, the idea, or even reading that passage in Deuteronomy, actually debt was seen as being a bad thing. But actually now kind of credit is seen as being kind of, oh, that you want this? Well, you can get it on credit. You can get it on hire purchase. You can, and now, of course, I understand that living in a practical world, and I know for some of you, you've got mortgages, that we have to live where money is being borrowed and where we may use a credit card. We may have a mortgage. And in some ways, to live within the West, kind of, there might be things that look like debt. In some ways, I think for things like mortgages or a credit card, I mean, for me personally, I think until you miss a payment, it's not debt. As soon as you start missing payments, I think actually that's when we talk about the Bible, about what it says about debt. I just want to ask the three of you kind of what you think about debt. And in some ways with debt, the anxiety that comes alongside with money. Again, debt can come through all kinds of reasons, can't it? Through sickness or injury, through being made redundant. Changes in life circumstances, a new baby, they're expensive. Whether it is the interest rates have changed, whether it is that a relationship breakdown and there's now two households to run rather than one, whether it is that, keeping up with people. I mean, I've got this idea, and again, this is old person Tim. I think there's this idea that this everyone else has, ... therefore I should have, ... even if I can't afford it, I should have it because everyone else has got one of these and I don't want to be... And actually, then you get yourself into debt. So this is our kind of last bit. But so, yeah, anybody, what's your thoughts on, anxiety around money, finding yourselves in debt? Any thoughts, wisdom to share?
I think we need to talk more about money and be more open with each other about money, and maybe if we're struggling, also to be open about that, because once we know, we can be praying for people, we can be supporting, and I think there's so much shame with the topic of money, which is just so silly, the fact that we all have to steward it, we all have it, or don't have it, and we've at times all gone through that, so it's about actually saying, you know, let's be honest with each other, let's talk about it more, and let's work with it together.
I don't have lots to say on debt, I guess, because I don't have a mortgage and I haven't done the big things yet. But I have my student loan, but luckily in this country there's quite a good way to pay that off, so it should be fine. But I can talk about, like, just anxieties around money, or, like, sometimes, you know, between jobs. Or I work... one of my main jobs is that I work in music business, and a lot of that is like touring and like live events, and like there are busier seasons and there are less busier seasons. So when it's not sunny and everyone isn't in a field, there's less work than there is now, for example. But the Bible tells us multiple times not to worry, but to trust in God's provision. And you can find that in the later part of Matthew 6. And so this trust just involves acknowledging that God ultimately knows our needs before we ask. But we should ask. That's the whole point. He wants us to ask. But prayer becomes a powerful tool in like surrendering our anxieties to God and seeking his guidance in managing our finances wisely. And that may look like debt, and that may look like not knowing where the provision for the bills are going to come from.
If we're saying that debt is just borrowed money, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with debt. In work, I help people get debt. It means that they can do projects which they wouldn't otherwise be able to afford. It means that people around the world are connected to clean energy and things like that. I think when the distinction changes from I have debt to I am in debt, that's when I think things start to become problematic. And I think with debt, if it's something that is very controlled, you know, I buy something on my credit card because if an airline goes bust, I actually have better protections than if I bought it on a debit card. Things like that. That's very different to I buy on my credit card so that I can stretch to next month because I can't afford to buy this right now. Or I'll pay on Klarna and I'll think about it in 3 months. That, I think, can be more problematic. I think as Christians, budgeting is probably a really helpful practice because otherwise we don't know how generous we can be. And I think as well, as our incomes change over time, and I'm in a career where over kind of a number of years my salary might go up, having a very clear understanding of what we as a household need to budget to live on, that probably doesn't need to change even if I do get a pay rise. So understanding what we need, and I suppose it's back to that contentment point, is what do we need to spend, and then what's the rest? And I guess the what's the rest is how we deal with that. And if, as long as we're still within our means with borrowing money, I think that's okay. I think with all of this, I think it's also really important to remember it's never too late to kind of start thinking about, oh gosh, I've got myself in such a pickle, but I really want to steward money well. And whatever position we're in with money, it's never too late to decide that and to start thinking about, well, here's where I am and here's what I need to budget to get to there. And when I'm there, I can budget this amount and kind of incrementally work in very budgeted steps. But I love a budget, yeah. Tim.
Oh, yes. It's fascinating that something like Christians Against Poverty, when they do debt, get people out of debt, actually budgeting is one of the first things they'll say, is that if you've never talked with somebody about what money's coming in and what money's going out, that's the first kind of thing. And I think, in some ways, that's part of the stewardship conversation, isn't it, of how... but I do realise, and we're going to finish in a moment, that actually debt stirs up all kinds of emotions. Probably the most overwhelming of those is fear. Of what's going to happen to me, what's going to happen to my future, what's going to happen to my finance, and what's going to happen to my family. And I think that's where God has got something to step in and to do something, where we feel hopeless and we feel trapped. And in a moment or two, we're going to do some sung worship. Actually, we'll offer the chance to pray, because actually you may be here this evening and you may be in debt. And you may feel it's just out of control. You maybe feel that it's crushing you. There's the fear, there's the shame with it. Maybe you haven't told anyone because you thought I'm supposed to be a good Christian and my money's out of control. But actually, with Jesus, when we come to him, we actually find there is hope, there is life. And talking about it is kind of one of those things. And a very practical one of the things, when I feel fearful about money, and sometimes there's not as much money coming in as I know needs to go out, and I can get fearful. And I know when I do that, it's the fight between fear and faith. Do I fear things and try and sort it out with my own strength, or do I trust and rely on God? And so one of the practical things that I do, if ever I feel slightly anxious about money, I'll always give some away. And you might think, Tim, that's silly. If you feel worried about money and you've not got much, why on earth would you give some away? It's because I don't want it to have power over me. I don't want that fear to dominate who I am. I want faith to dominate who I am. And always kind of, and do you know what? It breaks that sense of fear and encourages a sense of trust whenever I do that. Just lastly, before kind of while I wind up, if there was just kind of one tip that you were to give the assembled throng here about money, generosity, stewardship, what would that be? Should we start with you, T? Is that okay? If you had, there's one little tip as we finish, what would that be?
Yeah, so remembering that when we give, we don't do it to receive, but nevertheless, it is a catch-22, so when you do give, it is a cycle and you will end up being blessed somehow, somewhere.
Yeah, I think I just wrote be accountable. So talk to other people about money, talk to people about how you want to make choices, and then consider to just review it and pray about it with other people.
Yeah, and I think just examining your heart and what your motives and drivers are around money, and I think avoiding secrecy. I think as soon as you're in the position where you're trying to keep anything a real secret about financial affairs, I think that's a really good opportunity to speak to a friend who you really know is for you and is absolutely for you, and just be completely open about finances. So I have a couple of friends who we have those sorts of conversations, and I think that's really, really helpful in avoiding, I guess, the pull and the temptation around money.
Yeah. Great. Jesus says this, just to finish, no one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You can't serve both God and money. And I think that's a discipleship choice. The reality is that money and possessions are likely to be the major competitor with Jesus for the lordship of your life. Money and possessions are likely to be the major competitors with Jesus for the lordship of your life. If you want to live life that's good, that's well, that's vibrant, make sure you love God and money as a servant, and you don't love money, and somehow it can have that pull on your faith. We're going to take a chance to pray, and then Dave and Rebecca are going to help us. But again, a round of applause for these guys. Thank you so much for sharing. Yeah, Lord, thank you so much that your word has something to teach us and to inspire us. That maybe we don't often feel it's very kind of British to talk about money and how much we earn and how much we give. But actually there's something about being your disciples where we are open, where we want to encourage and inspire one another. I pray where there's always a competition with who's going to be Lord in our lives, pray, Jesus, that you would win and would put possessions and money in their right place. Help us, I pray, to live free. And where, for some of us here, maybe there's fear, where there's maybe debt and shame, maybe there's maybe some gambling that we've got ourselves into, where kind of we're reaching for success and worth that's to do with money and possessions. Lord, I pray tonight you bring some freedom in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for the wisdom in the room. Just before we just take a chance to pray, just want to just tell you very practically about some mechanisms for Woodlands Church. So first of all, if you want to know about our income as a church, we want to be transparent too. And if you go to our giving page on the church website, there will be a link to our accounts, which are audited. The Charity Commission website will also have them there. And you can find out a detailed report of exactly how much money we have, where it came from, and how it's spent. And just to say as well that the public offerings that we have here, none of that goes to Woodlands itself. They're all given away to the charities that we support. But that we are really grateful to and depend on the giving of our congregants to help us do Christian ministry. And I guess most of the money that comes for Christian ministry goes towards things like people. So there are over 50 people within the Woodlands Church family that are, to some degree, are remunerated. And also buildings and resources. And plus of that, all the kind of ministries that flow out of those. You know, everything that we do, whether it's giving away coffee or whether it's running an Alpha course, all of that comes from the giving of church. And so we're so grateful that we can do that because of the generosity of people. But, you know, from time to time, it's helpful for us to review our commitment to the work of God here. And I suppose for us, you know, we budget because we want to let our global partners know how much money they can expect from us every year. We tell our charities, this is what you're going to receive from us week by week. So we make commitments that are budgeted, and we make commitments for our plans. And there is a finance committee, and there is accountants, and all that kind of stuff involved. And I'm really grateful to be part of a church that takes money, not just individually, but communally as a discipleship issue. But the challenge for us is, there's a whole lot more giving that the world needs. However much we do give, we're still wealthy compared with other parts of our city and much more when it comes to internationally. So that call and that challenge to give is one that is a very real thing. And it's about, in some ways, treasure in heaven is the ability to bless God by blessing his cause and his people. So thank you for all of that.